Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and I'm your host, Austin. This week, we're getting into, I think, something a little bit different, something we haven't talked a ton about on this podcast. Although, my guest this week is Jonah from Shepherd's Group. He's been on a couple times previous to this, so it is going to be a somewhat familiar discussion, but I don't know. I have mixed feelings about like pulling back to like, you know, hey, when Charlie Kirk was assassinated, all the questions, right, that people had about the event, all the questions that people had with his protective detail and security, because he traveled with security, right? Because when he was going and visiting these different campuses and locations and things, obviously, with the world we live in, unfortunately, people are cruel. People are evil. People are angry, right? Because they just don't agree with what was being said, right? And they weren't intelligent enough to articulate back to Charlie Kirk, right, their perspective. And that's the problem, right? Is that when you argue with fools, you become one, I think is the phrase. But unfortunately, it went way further than that. And unfortunately, right, he lost his life, and now we're all asking the questions. What happened? How did it happen? You know, is this the real shooter? You know, all that stuff. But we're going to get a little bit more into the executive protection side of things, or bodyguarding, right, for a lack of or a less professional term, right, which is sort of the field that Jonah really is an expert in. I don't think we're going to get any necessarily like trade secrets here that's going to compromise anybody, but certainly I think with something like this happening, it definitely changes the perspective. Things are seen differently in industries like that. It's just like, you know, I told you guys I work in finance and banking. So when a big bank goes under, right, because of some kind of regulatory miss or, you know, something like that, right, it shakes the whole industry. It's not just a problem for that one organization. It becomes an industry-wide problem, and everyone's reeling and adjusting. And I think based off of just the brief conversations I've had with Jonah, you know, leading up to our discussion today, it's a different game now. Maybe not a lot different, but certainly different enough that maybe it is a lot different. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what he has to say about it. I think it's something that a lot of people had questions on when you knew that he had certain body men with him, and then this all happens and, you know, okay, well, what kind of measures are being taken? Did they miss something? And you know, you get the conspiracy stuff too. It's, oh, it was a drone. It was this, it was that, it was the other thing. I think we're probably going to get away from some of that stuff just because I don't know how to substantiate a lot of that, not to take any validity away if someone has information they'd be willing to share, but, you know, have that conversation, talk about it a little bit, because I think when we talk about how to keep ourselves safe and our family safe, and certainly when we talk about more high profile individuals in our community, this is the stuff that's extremely relevant. So we're going to dive into it. We're going to hear his side of it. I'm going to have, you know, no doubt a bunch of questions, probably some of them I'm sure some of you guys might think are stupid, but that's the only way I know how to learn, right? You got to ask the question and see if you can figure out what the heck is going on and learn some stuff along the way. Obviously that's always been the goal, the mission here at Prepared Mindset is to learn, right? But bring you guys along for the journey as well. But before we get into this week's discussion, which I have absolutely no doubt this is going to be a very interesting, very detail-oriented kind of conversation here. Before we get into that, you know, we do have an ad space. This is a sponsored podcast. We do work with some pretty awesome companies in our community. Yes, our community. And within the industry that are very supportive of what I bring to you guys every week, every month with the sit rep discussions, the videos on YouTube, right? So I want to take a few moments here. I want to say thank you to our partners in the industry, in the community, and thank them for their support. And that starts with my friends over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, it's actually funny today. They dropped a video on how you can swap out the universal battery compartment on the MH1, which is a housing from Lloyd Innovations. And it's one of the housings that they sell. And if you're interested in learning more about this, you can obviously go to customnightvision.com. That's their website. You can look up all the tubes, all the housings, all the devices and things that they have available. You can also head on over to YouTube and check out the Custom Night Vision channel, right? So you can see Kevin going through, basically I watched it like 7 times, right? Going through how you dissect and take apart your MH1 device, and you can, you know, basically swap out the regular battery compartment, if your device came with that, for the universal battery compartment. There's also, you know, stuff put out there by the manufacturer, but Custom does an absolutely fantastic job, I think, with bringing transparency and information to all of us. You know, the consumers, that's their mission goal. That's really what they stand for, is having the most transparent purchasing experience that they possibly can offer you guys, their customers. So whether you're heading on over, and again, the website is customnightvision.com, whether you're there to check out something like a single tube device, like a PVS-14 with maybe an L-bit tube or an L-3 tube, or maybe something a little bit more budget oriented, like something from Photonis or, you know, NNVT, or you're there to pick up a binocular housing device, right? You're going to buy once, cry once, and you want something like the, you know, the RNVG from AB Night Vision, or the Manticore, right, from Nocturne Industries. They have all of those options and more in stock. And if you guys have questions, if you need support, you can hit them up on Instagram. You can also message them directly through customnightvision.com. There is a chat function that is built into the lower right-hand corner of the website. So when you head over to the website, look around, you can build your own custom device, you can find helmets, lasers, lights, and a whole lot more, and talk to the team over at Custom if you have any questions. Again, it's customnightvision.com. Go check it out for yourselves today and get the superpower you can buy. But also want to take a moment here and say thank you to the good folks over at Harrington Arms. Their website is harringtonarms.com. That's Harrington with an E. And they actually just sent me out their HC95 V2 compensator. So the 95 was the one that I was shooting previously. Really liked it. Jake reached out, hey, do you want to try the version 2? It has an increased recoil reduction. So an additional 8% recoil reduction. And, you know, people might say, well, what's 8%? It's like, well, you know, that's almost 10%. And if we had it at 10, I'm sure a lot of people would be jumping on that. So I said, hey, yeah, send it out to me. Another great, great company that's supporting what we're doing here. And they also have some fantastic video support on their YouTube channel. I was able to figure out, you know, how to remove my compensator because it kind of got seized on. I used a little bit too much Loctite. But you guys head on over to harringtonarms.com. Check out all the stuff they have available to you, whether that's the magwells, the magazine extensions, yes, obviously the compensators, or soon you'll be able to check out their Hacker proprietary barrel and compensator system that works with the QD functionality. Really, really cool stuff going on with those guys. Again, it's harringtonarms.com. Go check it out. So thank you to both those companies for the terrific support they have for Prepared Mindset and the mission that we have to bring information, you know, bring the educational side of things to you guys, fill in some of the gaps, answer questions on so many things, right? As we have a lot of talented, you know, and experienced guests joining me week to week for our discussions. And occasionally, even some of these weeks when you guys just get to hang out with me and listen to me, you know, rant and rave and go on and on about all kinds of different, you know, awesome and interesting stuff. But, you know, I think this week's discussion is going to be a good one. I think it's different from what we normally get into. And it is a relatively closed off, that's my phrase, a closed off portion of our community for good reason, right? You're talking about some of the trade secrets and things and strategy, if you will, right, around protecting people. And that's the kind of stuff you don't want necessarily everybody to know, but certainly can be very useful and very helpful when we're talking about trying to protect our own families, those that we love, right? Because certainly I think there's going to be changes in their industry, and everyone's looking at it going, okay, well, where were the mistakes made? How can we fix this? How can we correct this? And I think you probably see that anytime there's a high profile assassination anywhere in the world, right? People look at it and go, you know, whether it's a political assassination or, you know, I don't really know what, as I'm saying that, right, what other kind there could be, but I'm sure whether they're being guarded by a government agency, much like we would have here with our Secret Service, right? And when the shot was taken at Donald Trump last summer, right, I'm sure they looked at that as well as did everybody else. Obviously, we talked about it on here on the podcast, but then also with Charlie Kirk, you know, and the tragedy where he lost his life, people take a objective look at it and try to figure out, hey, what the hell happened here? What did we miss? What can we do better? What can we change? What can we do differently? Just everything. I think in those kinds of extreme situations, you have to be like hyper vigilant with the details. So I think that's what we're going to get into, you know, in this discussion with Jonah. We're going to dive in, we're going to dig in. Like I said, I have some questions. He's always very, very helpful with, you know, sharing what he knows and what he can share, right, about this kind of stuff. So it should be a very interesting conversation, one that I think you guys are going to learn a lot from and also enjoy. So with that, let's get over to my discussion with Jonah. Here we go, guys. Jonah, brother, welcome back to the podcast, man. Thanks for making the time.
Hey, thanks, bro. I'm honored. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah. Yeah. I really have been looking forward to hearing your perspective on, you know, we're a lot of things, honestly, but we were talking about a bunch of it just before we hit record here. And I unfortunately, I don't know, I have a mixed emotion around, like, I don't want to just keep harping right on like the Charlie Kirk assassination and everything, but it has been pivotal is the word I'll use, maybe transformative for some folks, right? I think a lot of people, myself included, like I went out and bought my first like adult Bible, you know, just trying to do things differently, live better. And I think in your line of work with what you do, with protective services and things like that, right? It's, you know, the way I equated it to in the intro when I recorded that is like, I work in banking, you know? So when we had like the Wells Fargo thing, you know, fall apart, like the whole industry shook. Yeah. This isn't quite the same thing, but it is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like I think on it face. Changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been I was sitting in my office with the management team for one of our clients when actually I take that back. I was sitting in my office with a new guy that we just hired, and I was doing some in-doc stuff with him, and someone sent me the video of Charlie.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got the video, my phone started blowing up from clients. And then 5-10 minutes later, management team from one of our clients that I'm like on the ground with a lot, their management team comes to my office and like, what do we do? And So from there, I mean, my business partner and I both for the next like 24 to 36 hours, it was like phone calls, emails, like my phone didn't stop ringing until 2 o'clock that morning. Like the next morning, it was people freaking out because the clients we work with too are very like particular set of like subset of, I don't want to say stardom, but of the public eye, where like all of our clients are faith-based.
I think you had mentioned that, I think the last time you were on that was like the focus of where you guys wanted to provide your skills and your business was to those kinds of folks. And given that what happened, right, Charlie, because of how outspoken he was and his faith and everything. Yeah. That certainly makes, I think, your situation that much more, stressful. I think it's probably the word.
Like, 'cause my first thing was like, well, let's find out like, what was the motive? I think there's still so much, like, we don't have to get into that, but there's still a lot of question around all of that. Mm-hmm. But for us, it was like, you know, this changes the game regardless, because this is a stateside assassination of a, whether you want to call him a political figure or a faith figure or whatever, you know, at the end of the day, he still wasn't a politician. I'm not saying it's okay to like assassinate politicians, but I'm saying like JFK getting assassinated or a president, you're like, okay, there's XYZ people that would want this to happen. Well, then with the list with Charlie, mm-hmm. It might be some of the same list, but then there's like more, there's like an added list of things.
Yeah.
When you add the faith key in there. And so for us, it was like, well, let's see what, like, why did this happen? And then with that really not ever being answered, it was for us, it was like, okay, well, we just have to make sure that, you know, we're covering, and really too, because the thing is, he had a team with him, like he had a protection team.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys in the industry, their like response was to like, you know, poke and point fingers at those guys and be like, you should have done this, should have done that, should have done this. And I mean, until you've done it and you're there and you realize like each thing is different, like you can't really point those fingers and say those things. There are things that you could be like, well, you could have done this, could have done that, and maybe they did those things. I don't know, you know what I mean? But it's like there's just so many variables. So for us, the next step was like, okay, how do we equip our clients? How do we equip our guys? How do we prepare for this kind of thing? Because what it really did is, you know, there's kind of a way you operate when you're working in the States versus the way you operate in South America versus the way you operate if you have to go to Europe. Like there's different things that you have to take into consideration. And really like it's kind of like a good way to equate it. It's like when you look at church security teams, traditionally church security teams all train for an active shooter event. And historically, if you're doing like a threat matrix, active shooter is like at the middle to bottom of the possibility. Like medical would be a way better, like focus of training. And then like verbal de-escalation would be a really good focus of training. I wouldn't say that now. I would say now that I think I was telling you earlier, violence towards faith-based organizations, like acts of violence, has increased 780% since 2018 to 2025. And so I would say now that in 2025, you should know how to shoot. You should know how to shoot accurately. You should know how to, respond to those things. Like that's a bigger focus. But what I'm saying is the focus of the higher level of what is a threat and what isn't a threat, traditionally, it wasn't necessarily the same, depending on what your client was, it wasn't necessarily the same in the States as it was in South America or in, XYZ other
Oh,
country. But
sure.
now that changed. That's totally, it's that's not even, that's off the table now. It's a something you have to think about, because also in the faith-based world, because of how polarizing Charlie's death was and the responses to that, like we have clients who have gotten death threats because of they didn't respond the way people wanted them to, or they just didn't respond. They just were quiet. And people sent them hate and threats because of that. And then we had people who responded and they didn't like the way they responded. And because that meant that they were attached to the. And so it's like, it's so. And one of the things I was saying earlier that really I think Charlie's death changed the most is that used to, there was this idea of these people don't agree with us. We believe this, they believe. And then you even have like subsects where it's like, well, we agree with these people on this, but we disagree on that. And then and you had all these different groups of people that were like, well, I really think there was even a pushback to like the idea of like left and right. It was like, well, I believe this, but it doesn't really line up with that. And I believe this. And there was like people meshing their own thing. Well, what happened after the Charlie thing was it was like, no, either you're good or you're evil. And that exists on both sides. And it's the idea of if I'm good and you're evil, and the other side says, well, I'm good and you're evil. Well, the problem with that is that when you're looking at good versus evil, then violence becomes a justified reaction to evil. And that's why people don't care if you beat the crap out of and track down and end your child's sex offender. You know what I mean? Because we're like, that's evil. And because that's evil, we can destroy that. And people kind of universally agree on that, right? And so nowadays, because there's this line in the sand that one side says I'm good, you're evil, the other side says, well, I'm good, you're evil, and there's a justified like moral acceptance of violence towards the opposite side. And you can't just say that exists on the side you disagree with, because it exists on both sides. And it's like we're okay with a violent response. And then so from our perspective, as looking at, okay, how do we protect people, how do we protect our clients? Then now we have to understand that there are a group of people who are now deciding that the clients that we work with are evil because of X, Y, or Z. And now that justifies a violent response to those individuals, because if we eradicate them and we eradicate their message, then we eradicate quote unquote evil. And so that whole thing has increased the threat level in the States and the polarization of that more so than it existed the day before. What happened, and we've seen it continually, and it's not dying down, and it's just increasing more and more. And every time something happens, there's a new classification, and well, this person was attached to that, and this person did that, and so there's this like ongoing angst in the country that is allowing violence being justified on a whole new level that we haven't seen before. And so that has really changed the way I was telling you earlier too. Like there's a lot of clients that were like kind of potential clients, and they were talking to us about maybe working with us. And then the Charlie thing happened. And then they were like, okay, we're doing it. We're not waiting. We're doing it. And then we had other clients that we were working with that maybe we had one guy on them or two guys on them. And now they're like, okay, we need as many guys as you can give us. And so it's like it just increased everything all the way around. And for us, we're like, okay, yes, we want to give you what you think you need. We want to give you what you want. That's great. We want to work with you. But also, we want to educate you, and we want to present you with information that actually we're not gonna fear monger, and we're not gonna try to like present things in a way that scares you so that you work with us. We want to present things in a way that you're educated, so that when we're doing X, Y, or Z to protect you, then you understand that. And I think that to me is where I think the realities of our industry ties into being a prepared civilian, because it's really easy to prepare for the apocalypse, because that's a generalized, like, you can make the apocalypse what you want. Did you ever see that show? I think it's come on the Discovery Channel, like in the mid 2000s. It was called Preppers.
Oh yeah,
So
there
it's
was some
like,
crazy folks on there.
yeah, but the thing that I remember is each prepper was preparing for something different. Like none of them, their opinion of the end of the world was not, none of them, it was the same. And that kind of exists, I think, in the prepared civilian space, where it's like, well, I'm preparing for this, and I'm preparing for that, and I'm preparing for this. And it's even like we've seen the transition kind of go from like everybody wanting really sleek, high speed kit to people wanting like sustainment kit. And it's like there's just this ebb and flow that happens of people changing their perspective, what they need to be prepared for. And for us, we agree that civilians should be prepared. We agree that, you know, the general population should take responsibility of their own safety. But there has to be an education of what the reality of the life you live actually looks like, so that you can prepare accordingly. Because if not, then you're just wasting money on things that you will probably never need, and you're getting training you probably will never need. And it's like, I'm not saying you shouldn't go have fun and do all the fun classes. Those are great, but also be realistic about like, where do you live? What kind of things do you post on social media? Like, what kind of things are you associating yourself with in public? Are you talking about who you vote for? Are you to like be aware of what your life looks like, and then preparing for how to safely navigate those things, and understanding, you know, one of the things that we see a lot is that 9 times out of 10, the people we work with have no idea about what the world around them sees when they look at them. And they don't understand what the world around them looks at people who live the kind of life they live and believe the things that they believe. And we kind of can get caught up in like this vacuum of, if we only hang out with people that agree with us and we live in a town where people mostly live the way we live, we can start to forget that there are evil things and there are crazy people and there are disillusioned individuals who would like to see the way we live eradicated. And now the tiptoe around and like the dance of it is, how do you present an information without it becoming fearful? And then I would say, as like a normal person, the question is, how do you consume that information without personally becoming fearful? Because if you live in fear, you can't be prepared. Like the fear,
Yeah,
like preparedness is the antithesis of, yeah.
it's all consuming, and it's also not realistic to try and tackle all of that stuff at once. And
Exactly.
that's, people think they need that, right? Like, oh, well, and I'm not saying, I'm sure there were some people that re responded this way to what happened with Charlie. Like, I need to go buy a gun. I need to go get a holster. I need to go get training. I need to learn combatives. I need to learn, I mean, whatever you could, like, you could throw together like a whole list, you know, of all kinds of different things. And then you look at it and you go, man, this is going to cost me a fortune. It's honestly, it's the same discussion I have with folks, like completely separate, but the same with like, hey, get night vision, right? Like, oh, I got to buy a helmet and I got to buy a laser and the night vision's so expensive. I'm like, well, you don't do it all at once, man. Like, spread it out. But that's also the rub when people, when it's a reactionary change to your lifestyle, where you go, I feel you're hit with that sudden reality of I'm so unprepared for what could happen. And that shock, and you're like, I want to get everything now. And you realize that this isn't a, you know, something that most people can afford to do, you know, in a weekend, and let
Well,
alone being able to digest information like that. It's a lot.
it's similar to me to like, if you've ever hung out with someone who thought they were like Billy Badé, and their reason was just because they were, or like maybe they like were like the scrappiest dude in their high school, and they like, you know, won a bunch of like random fist fights with teenagers, and they carry that attitude into adulthood, and then they get in an actual like fist fight for something with a real person, with a real grown man, and they get their face beat in, and they're like, oh my God, I'm gonna go do MMA tomorrow. And then they go sign up at a gym, and then they realize it's hard, And then they're like, never mind. And it's like, but there's this ebb and flow of like, you come to turn, you come to face with your deficit and what you suck at and where you're behind. And then, and we see this with clients too. This happens all the time. Something bad happens. And for 3 weeks, and that's usually about the life cycle, for about 3 weeks, they're like, you're in charge. Anything you need, whatever you want, like, just make me safe. And then in about 3 weeks, they forget about what happened and they start to think, well, that was just a fluke. That's not going to happen to me. And then they're like, all right, we really don't need all this stuff that we put into play. Like, let's tone it back a little bit. You know what I mean? And so that same thing happens on a personal level where it's like you freak out, you get scared. You know, churches go through the same thing with church security. You get a mass shooting happens. Well, every church, you know, where I live, when the shooting happened at the LDS church in, is that in Michigan, I think? And the truck was driven into the church, and then the guy got out and started shooting. All the churches around here had like a meeting, and like all the security guys at their churches are like, "This is what we do. What do you do? What blah blah blah." And then after that, it's like, okay, well, now let's look at practical training things that we can put into play for that, and then like that kind of dies. You know what I'm saying? And then another mass shooting happens, and then they do it again, and it's just this cycle of it always being that. Whereas to me, living like a prepared conscious, I think that's the term. It's like, it's not even like, it's like if you're just aware, if you're aware of the world you live in and you're like a decent human being with anyone that you're responsible for, then you'll have a desire to be prepared in the face of the life that you live in and the big picture of what's happening. And I think a lot of times that's, we start to live in like a microcosm of like our day to day of like where we are. And then we start to lose sight of like the bigger picture. And then we think, well, that can't come to us. It's not going to happen here. And it's like, I was talking to one of the guys that works with me today. And I was like, we just bombed another cartel boat off the coast of Venezuela. He was like, yeah, dude, that was freaking sick. I was like, yeah, it is cool until the cartel retaliates here. He was like, I didn't even think about that. And I'm like, exactly. So it's like we have to start to look at the bigger picture of like there are things that we're like, yeah, heck yeah, America, like let's do that, let's go. And we're like, okay, but we also live in a world where for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Cause and effect,
That's right. And so it's like you can't just be pro your political view and not understand the repercussions of your desires coming to fruition. Like there's also a repercussion of that thing, right? It's like you can be super pumped that your wife gets pregnant and you're gonna have a kid. That's great. That's exciting. But then when you don't sleep for 3 years, you know what I mean? And now you're buying diapers and your whole life changes. You're like, okay, there's beauty, but there's also something difficult inside of this thing. You know what I mean? So it's like just looking at the bigger picture. That's kind of one of the things that's really become a passion of mine is if we're going to protect people, if we're going to keep people safe, I love hard skills. I love shooting. I shoot like multiple times a week. I love combatives. I love blades. I love, you know, all the stuff, all like defensive driving. I love it all. But I also have become kind of obsessed with like everywhere we go and everything we do, I want to know, what does the framework of that place look like? When I go somewhere with a client, what does that city look like? What does the crime look like in that city? What does the leadership look like in that city? How are the cops going to view my job? How are the local politicians going to view my client? How are the people that live there going to view my client? How are they going to view the event that we're doing? How are they going to view all of these things? And then that gives me the framework to know how my hard skills apply to that thing. And if I'm not looking at it from that standpoint and I'm just coming at it from the place of like, I'm a dude with a gun and some tattoos and I'm gonna stand in the corner and do this thing, it's like that doesn't cut it anymore. That's
It's
not a
not
conversation.
enough.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
And there's like we were saying, cause and effect. There's a penalty for not doing things, for not changing things. You know, like I had a friend reach out, and he participates with his church. They have a security team, and had some disagreements to how some things were being ran. And, you know, hey, you do a lot of stuff. You know, like, would you come in and talked to a couple of us about potentially setting up some training stuff just to help with like basic, I don't even want to call it CQB. It's basically just like helping them with some fundamentals of like coordinated search in the event that something happened. I was like, well, I'll come talk to you out, but I'm gonna be very upfront. Like, I don't do this. I haven't done it. It's not my thing. And that's all I ever heard. Never got to come in and work with them. Never got to like really, like, I toured the facility and it stopped there. And I'm like, look, I hope you guys went and got another company or something, like did something, because it's great that you guys have a security team, but at the same time, like, I've heard, about how the training that they go through. They contracted with some weird company that does terrible tactics with them. They have people that want to help out, but they haven't sourced out any way to bring in additional training. Like, specifically, like, hey, we have 8 people who are armed. Cool. But we have like another 12 who want to help, but they either shouldn't carry a gun or they don't want to carry a gun. I'm like, have you guys looked into medical training or even like radio and communication stuff? Like, there's work behind all of those components to help coordinate these things. Like, the medical piece of it is huge. And because that could be anything. That could be like a church fair and some kid falls off the Ferris wheel, Lord forbid. And there's a penalty to inaction. And I, unfortunately, it takes tragedies like this for people to start looking at stuff. And then, like you said, right? Yeah, I think you said like 3 weeks, which actually feels like pretty accurate too. Like, hey, oh yeah, it's fine. We just forget about it and we settle back into that lull, that false security of, no, we don't need to worry about it. It's fine. It's not going to happen here.
Well, a big part of it too is that we're consuming information at such a high rate that, like social media has kind of forgotten about whatever tragedy happened in that amount of time, and then they move on to the new thing, and because everything's in our hand and we're getting so much information so quickly, that tends to be kind of the lifespan of just our memory of what's happening and what's going on. I mean, I'm sure if we started like pulling up things that happened 3 weeks ago in like even global, like the global news, we probably don't remember most of it. You know what I mean? And then also too, the thing that's like a really like it's a reality for us today in our current environment in the US is that a lot of the things that happen don't even get airtime. Like they're not even being talked about, particularly if it doesn't fulfill a political agenda of like pushing, like if you have something where it's like a mass shooting, and it either the dude kills himself after he kills all these kids at a school or whatever, that's going to get more airtime than a shooting, the attempted shooting at a church that gets stopped by a good guy with a gun because it doesn't fit the same political ideology. But you have those things to think about too, where it's like you're not hearing, we don't ever hear the good stories of what preparedness looks like when it's when it is efficient and effective. So then in that we only hear the bad and we almost get addicted. I mean, think about it, like reality TV. If reality TV is positive, it tends to be boring.
Yeah,
You
that's a
know what
great
I mean?
example.
But when it's a train wreck, we're like, this is amazing. I cannot stop watching this, right? And but it's just all it's that's just how we like it. We like the craziness. We like the, and think about John Wick. Why is John Wick such a good movie? Because it's nonstop violence from start to finish. Almost no one knows what the storyline is. There's like a loose storyline to begin with. It's
Well, I
just fight,
mean,
fight, 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 fight.
yeah, I mean, like in the first one, like I think it was our, we all get behind him, man. Like, don't fuck with a dude's dog. And, but yeah, to your point, like once you like two, three, four, and then there's like that other one too, it's like, what are we still doing this? Like, and, but you still go watch. Yeah, to your
That's
point,
right.
it's
That's right.
gratuitous violence. We want to watch it and want to see.
That's right. Well, even too, it's like, we had a one of our clients had a big event back in September, I think it was. And so we had it was like a it was on the smaller side. It was like 4 or 5,000 people, and 2 day event. And our client was hosting. It was their event, and so we had a 6-man team of our folks there, like that work for me. And then usually the way that works is then we work with venue security. So like the venue itself will have some sort of like t-shirt security team, like your $8 an hour, overweight dude in a folding chair.
Professionals, yeah.
Exactly. And then you'll have like a local LEO contingency and then like your paramedic EMT kind of thing. We always bring our own med, so we have like a guy on our team who will be at X, Y, or Z event who's like former, EMT, paramedic, SWAT med, something like that. Also there's a security element, but his main focus is like VIP med or like our team meds, things like that. So we have that. And then I had an idea because there's actually in the town that the client had the event, there's a church that I actually met their security team at the range. I was like leaving the sheriff's department range, and there was this dude out there like running a freaking legit like training day. And I was like, what is this? And he like comes over, he's like, hey, how are you? And we started talking for a minute. And one of my friends that works for me here knew him. He's like, hey, this is so and so, does this, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, we want to jump in on our range day? I was like, sure. I didn't even know what they're doing yet. I just hop in, start shooting. And he's like, I was like, so what is this? And he's like, this is our church security team. And I was like, oh, cool, okay. And so the dude who runs the team is like a former pulmonologist, retired, who's also like the SWAT medic, and he like runs this team like super squared away. Like they're like internal comms, med, like they run drills in the church. They like it's they're just super squared away. Like the most and another thing too is because of what we do, some of our clients when they do like a smaller show or like a smaller tour. So if we're like a Christian artist who does like a smaller music tour, they're touring at like the big like mega churches around the US. And so we're interfacing with church security teams like on the regular. Like one of my guys on a weekly basis pretty much is working with some random church security team all over the place. Which you live in, are you in Chicago? Close to Chicago?
I'm in Detroit.
Detroit. That's right. Detroit. That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why I thought that, but I had a horrible, horrible, horrible experience with a church security team in Chicago. It just like sparked my memory for a second. But anyways, I have to say this. So I walked in the door, and they were like, "Are you armed?" And I was like, "I'm not. I have no idea what you're talking about." And they're like, "What? If you're armed, we need your license and your concealed carry permit, and any insurance that you have." And I was like, "I'm not giving you anything." I was like, leave me alone. And because of that, they put one of their church security guys, this like overweight 50-year-old, on me. So everywhere we go, I'm moving with the client, and this dude is following me around the whole time. It was the craziest. It was amazing. It was so funny. But anyways, that's kind of what you deal with.
Did you just stop at any point and be like, "Hey man, are you okay? Do you want to sit down? You
I
look like you're
had to.
struggling."
So at one point, I walked out of a green room with a carbonated Topo Chico water in a can. And he said, you can't have that in here. And I was like, what? And he's like, no alcohol. And I was like, this is a water. And he's like, you can't have that. And so I just like handed him the water and like walked away. And that was like the only interaction I had with him. I was just like, what is going on? I was like, what? So it's like a lot of times we either have great experiences and they're awesome, or we have these like horrible, like, just like what the heck is going on? And so anyways, all that to say, I'm at the range. This guy runs a squared away security team. It's super awesome. And so I start talking to him, talking about different things, and then he asked me to come back and teach a portion of their like they train like the first Sunday of every month. And so he asked me to come back and teach a portion. And so before I start teaching, they do the post certification. They shoot the post qual before they start their range day.
Oh
And
wow. That's it's in, actually inspiring to hear that there's teams for church security that are ran that way, 'cause I think everything I've most of what I've seen is like very much struggle bus. You'll take anybody within reason, and you get guys who are carrying like little micro SIG 380 pistols 'cause it's what they conceal with, and I'm like, you guys got some issues. You can work some stuff out here.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I'll say too, like, I mean, if you've ever shot the post qual, it's not like it's kind of stupid, but it's a good like baseline. But they shoot the post qual, and then we go up for me to start like my block of instruction, And there's like two people sitting on a bench at the back of the range. And I'm like, hey, you guys, tell them to come up here for the class. And they're like, I was like, we're starting. And they're like, no, they can't come. And I was like, why? And they're like, well, because they failed the post shoot, so they can't do the rest of the range day. And they can't carry anymore until they pass the post qual again next month. And I was like, oh, okay. And so again, all that to say, I'd been talking to this guy, I knew this guy, had a good relationship. So when we did our event that my client was hosting, I X'd the venue security and I used this church security team for like entry, exit point, security, stationary, like baseline stuff, but I used them instead of venue security. And they had their own comms. They had like I had a liaison from my team working with them and kind of running them, but they were amazing. And so like you have that exists. But it's because the leadership understands the reality of the world that we live in. And so they take it serious and they provide a realistic training environment. And then they also don't, a lot of times church security teams can be full of like people that are like, well, I was going to be a cop, but you know, I don't take instruction very well.
But
Or
I
I was
didn't.
going to be in the military, but you know, I don't want nobody getting in my face and hollering at me. Or like, I didn't want to get a bad haircut. Like you have that kind of thing. And they do a good job of weeding that out and making sure that doesn't happen or doesn't exist in their culture. And so you have those pockets of things and those pockets of teams, but they're unicorns. And as a whole, like one of the things that we come face to face with a lot, and I just had a conversation this past week with someone, and I told the church, I was like, we'll do it for free. Like we'll pay to fly our guys in to teach it. We'll do it for free. We'll teach you guys, like we'll do a shooting portion, we'll do a medical portion, we'll talk about comms, we'll talk about team structure, we'll do an assessment of the building and like the different parts of the campus. We'll do all of that. We'll do it for free. You just let us know when you want to do it. And they were like, yeah, I just don't know. Like, yeah, blah, blah. And
What?
I'm like, we'll do it for free. I was like, I sent, it was over a text. I sent like three times. I was like, we'll do it for free. And they're like, oh, and I was like, for free. And I was like, free. I was like, there's just this mentality a lot of times of people are scared of bad and they're scared of evil. And I also want to caveat what I said earlier about the paradigm shift of it being good versus evil. I don't want to paint the picture that I don't believe that we're in a fight of good versus evil because I do. But I don't believe that the entirety of good versus evil exists within the parameters of a political party. I believe that good versus evil exists outside of and transcends politics and lives in a realm that's bigger than what we look at as political ideology. And I mean, we see those, dude. I mean, like not to freak people out or get crazy, but like the realm we work in, like we've seen like demon possessed people, like manifest a demon at an event we're working with a client. Like, yeah. So like I know evil exists. Like I know like the reality of what we're looking at. Like I have the kind of letters and things that people write our clients and the things that we see, like we had a cult leader show up to an event that one of our clients was doing with their own bodyguards and make threats to one of our clients. So like I know evil exists and I believe evil exists, but I believe that the reality of evil, I actually believe that for us to nail down and simplify evil to political ideology alone fits more so into the grand scheme of evil at scale than we even realize. Does that make sense?
I think, yeah, I think so. I think so, 'cause I don't know. I mean,
I
it's
know
a
I probably
tough
lost you when
conversation.
I said demon. I probably lost you for a minute.
I mean, it's not what I was expecting to hear, but I mean, hey, when you're dealing with religious folks and folks that are on the, that's a problem, is I think when people think religious folks, they just think about, conservative Americans, Bible thumpers, as it were. They don't, they like, people like to conveniently forget that there's the darker side of religious folks that
Dude,
have
I
like
think I'll say
alternative
I think
worship.
evil exists within. I personally believe evil exists within the realities of like modern evangelicalism. I think that evil, and that's my point, is that like if you put yourself in team red or team blue, and you decide that anything that's not blue or red is evil, then you will miss the evil that exists within the side you align yourself with.
Yes, dude, 100%. Because that's you're making the broad and sweeping assumption that off of a single characteristic of an individual, that they are 100% good, and that's too broad a generalization for me to be comfortable with. I think for anyone,
I agree.
realistically.
I agree. Well, the sad part is, I think it's too broad for what we should be comfortable with, but I think so many people have their thinking done for them by other people. And so whenever the person that we like the most, that's an outspoken voice for X, Y, or Z cause, we go off what they say. And if they say it, then we're down. Or if they say we're not for it, then we're not for it. When in reality, like, the overarching, and I think too, something that is really like important and something that we try to keep in perspective, and it's difficult. Like, this is the hardest thing for me about what we do and the clientele that we work with, is that it's really the people who you think are wrong and that you would label as evil that you should want to get to in a positive sense and make an impact on the most. Like, if you just write off and you say that's bad, those pe there's a differentiation. There's a difference in that's bad and they're bad. So
Yes.
you can say that is bad and they are doing something that is wrong, and my desire is that they would see something in me that encourages them to leave the thing that's wrong and do the thing that is right. Because inside of all of us exists that. Like, if we're gonna say that like the presence of something wrong negates the reality that a person can be right, then we have to like write all of ourselves off.
Well, because it's ignoring the truth that we all sin,
That's right,
right?
exactly.
Like, I mean, that's no one is without it. So to say that
Exactly.
anyone with it is 100% wrong, it's that's not
That's right. That's
gonna
right.
do that.
That's right. And so, anyways, like, we got way off of what we were talking about, but I just think there's a all that to say, we're at a very unique time in our country, particularly in the world as a whole, but in our country particularly. And I think that we're past the point of Americans being able to live in the lie that that's not going to happen here, or that's not going to reach here, or that's not going to affect us here. And we have to just accept the fact that, like it or not, we live in a failed state at some level. We have to accept the fact that like we can't just point to ourselves as like the morally superior, like great shiny example of what things are supposed to look like. We have to accept the fact, and I honestly personally believe that like one of the big, this is why I love the community of, and there's so much divisiveness in the gun community, there's so much divisiveness in like the quote unquote preparedness community and all those things, but I believe that some of the like salt of the earth people that like want to see change and have the ability to impact change are people I've met in this community. Some of the craziest, most nut job people I've met are in this community too. But
That's damn true.
yeah. But I think that the solution is in community, and the solution is in surrounding yourself with people that you don't mind going through the worst of times with. And I think that if we're being observant, then we could see that we're closer to the worst of times than we are the best of times. And so if you build that community of people around you, and like honestly, one of my favorite things about training is the relationship building aspect of it. So it's like I enjoy the relationships that training produces just as much as I enjoy the skill set that training produces. Because at the end of the day, being super well trained and super efficient at your craft, but being alone is inefficient.
Yeah, nobody can do it alone. I mean,
Exactly.
and you can't do it with people unless you trust them, you know, or it's very difficult to. So there's, yeah, I mean, I'll agree. I think that finding those relationships, building those relationships through, you know, the training, the shared hardship and the shared success too, right? I think is one of the coolest parts about the community. It's something I think you
Get some
have to
hate,
if you
bro.
want to,
I've been
you
seeing
like,
some hate online.
me?
Yeah, I've been seeing you get like in the comments, people are trashing you on your YouTube, bro.
Yeah, dude, happens all the time. And
I don't
say
want
it's this
glorify
community.
it, I saw a comment the other day and I was like, what? Like, God, you don't have anything better to do, people? Like, what are we doing?
There's way more of those out there, I think, than there are good dudes in our community right now. And I
I
think it's
agree.
just impulsiveness that leads them to do and say the things that they do. But, you know, I mean,
I'll
like
tell
we were
you
just
this.
saying, you kind of got to look for the good in folks and just kind of keep on going.
100%, 100%. I'll tell you this, dude. The hardest thing about our approach to what we do and how we do it has been because one of the things that we're one of the guarantees that we're kind of making to our clients is that we're guaranteeing a caliber of protection from a caliber of individual. And that's not, and I'm not knocking people that don't do this because at some point, like if you're going to scale your business, like honestly, if anything was going to limit our growth, it would be this thing I'm about to talk about. And it's the fact that we are choosing to only work with a certain kind of person of like the highest moral character and standard. And our training programs and the way that we talk about what we do and the way we talk about our approach to what our mission and vision is worded very intentionally so that we're holding guys accountable to their shooting standards, to their fitness standards, to their medical training standards, to their driving standards, to their code of conduct. And we're also holding them accountable to the kind of man that they are.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing because you can find a skill set easier than you can find a good dude. And some of the guys that we've hired guys from DevGuru, we've hired guys from Ground Branch, we've hired guys from PDs, we've hired guys from SOs, and we've hired guy one of my team leads right now who's out on the road with clients leading a team, used to put in pools before he started working for us. And he's just a freaking good dude.
Yeah.
And I trust him and he's, believes in what we're doing and he's passionate about it. And we trained him and he has because I have those other guys with those backgrounds, we can provide a high level of training in-house. And so it's like we can give you the skill set. I can't turn you into someone of high moral character. And
You have to
so
that for yourself. Like that's
100%.
like that's got to be an internal thing, and that's it. I put it, I think it ties into like you have to have that desire to be better. Like we're talking about like training, right, and building your skills. Like you have to want to get better. You have to want to get better as a man, as a person. Like all of that, I think is all tied together, and that's my opinion on like why I think some people in this space will find more, I'll say success or satisfaction or whatever, you know what I mean, whatever word you want to use for it, they'll get more out of this than other folks. And it doesn't have a dollar amount tied to it. It doesn't like, oh, you've got night vision, all this, and I don't. Like, it's got nothing to do with any of that stuff. And it got everything to do with what you get out of this, what you put into it.
No, yeah, I agree. And because something too that I think this is important when it comes to preparing for whatever emergency could present itself to your family, whatever tragedy could present itself to our nation, whatever danger could present itself to you as an individual. And then it also applies to what we do, it applies to what you do. Is that at some level of success and even like at some level of like optics, so like if you're traveling around with a famous person and there's a certain kind, like it's easy to start to go, well, look who I'm with. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, look at me. It's easy to do that. But when you, and this is kind of how I think this mindset lends itself to efficiency in training. It also lends itself to efficiency in building character. Is if you look at everything as a service and you look at it as I'm becoming, whether it's physical training or whether it's spiritual training or whether it's emotional training or whatever it is, you look at it as I'm doing this as a service so that I can serve those around me, those that have been put in my life for a reason. I'm doing this to serve them better. I'm not doing this to make me look better. I'm doing this to offer what I have as a sacrifice and say, this is what I have to offer. And however I can serve in this moment using those gifts, then I want to do that. And I want to use that. And that's where we've been able to build an amazing team is because a lot of the guys that have a heart to serve, but skills that don't fit into a normal church setting, they find a home with us. Because they're like, hey, I just spent all these years doing this thing. And now I got out of the military, or I retired as a law enforcement, or I, you know, whatever. I just, my brain is wired this way. I want to protect people. I want to do this. I want to do that. And they're like, how can I serve? And they're like, well, you can help in kids' church, and you can be on the worship team, and you can take up offering, and you can, and they give all these things, and all of those things happen. They're limiting you to being inside the church. And I think what a lot of people, because it's been interesting to see Jesus being on display to the masses lately in a way that it hasn't happened in the past, and people interested. Some people being turned away because of the way that it's presented, and some people being drawn in because of the way it's presented. But I think that one of the things that's interesting is I was actually with in the room with an artist the other day who's a musician, like top of the top charts, everything that he does. He's not my client, but he's in the room with my client. And this guy is like wild. And he's complaining about church people.
Oh
And
boy.
everything he said, I agreed with.
Oh shit.
I was like, that's right. I was like, everything you're saying is the things that are wrong with why I think the pe and again, I don't like don't anybody misread this, but it's why the people who didn't like Charlie because he was a Christian, they didn't care what he said about Jesus. They heard that he was a Christian and they associated in their mind what that meant to their experience with someone who was a Christian. And they hated him because they hated what they had experienced in the past. And what I think is necessary, and what I think is valuable, is if people who have a desire, if the people who have a desire to protect and serve others and are willing to do hard things and dangerous things for other people, if they'll get a hold of the reality of who Jesus is, not just the business of church, if they'll get a hold of what the Bible actually says, protect the widows and the orphans, then they'll be the best followers of Jesus and they'll be the best image to the world of what it actually looks like, because they'll be Christ-like, because they'll live sacrificially, because they're going to offer themselves in an effort to protect and save others with a mission and a vision that's bigger than they are, for a good that's bigger than what their side is, against an evil that's bigger than what the other side is. And it creates what it is you see the Bible come alive and you see Jesus come alive, instead of it being, I saw you post something the other day and you were like, somebody said, I think somebody asked you, like, what church would you recommend? You were like, I'm having a hard time finding one. And you're not in the minority. You're in the majority of people who are coming to Jesus, or they're seeking him out, or they're seeking out what it's about. They just bought a Bible and they're like, now what do I do with this? And the problem is, 9 times out of 10, the more you're reading the Bible, the harder it is to find the thing you're reading in the places where you could go and hear about the book you're reading.
And I was surprised to find that, honestly, talking to a couple, friends in the community and stuff. And we had Jeremiah and Brandon on a couple weeks ago talking about that. Like, I did not realize there were churches that don't teach the Bible. Like they do,
Which,
but they don't. And it's difficult and confusing, in a lot of ways, because I think people are lost. They're looking f that's what they're looking for, right? Is the guidance that they have either read or perceived from the Bible. And then you go to the church, and the church you find gives you a different message, so it's conflicting. You want to give your faith and your trust in your pastor, right? You want to believe that this is that they're supposed to understand this in the way that you don't understand. That's why you're going there, and it leads to problems, confusion.
yeah, I dealt with for a long time, partly from my own failings and my own issues, and then also from ones I experienced with other people. But I struggled with like a real cynicism towards church in general. And what I realized is that I would then go into a church and I would read my failures and my cynicism and my experiences into the church, and I would maybe they were there, maybe the failures were there, maybe they weren't. But I would read them into it because I wanted it to fail, because that fit my belief that everything was failing. And what I found is that I believe that if we look to church to be the end all be all of your relationship with Jesus, then you will be let down, because that's not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be people who are seeking him daily, coming together and being encouraged by the mutual striving with each other, not striving with each other against each other, but striving towards a goal, towards Christ likeness, and doing it together. It's the same thing as what training, hard training, produces in relationships, where you go and you sweat and you bleed and you do hard things. And then the relationship that you have with the guy that you did hard things, difficult things next to, is different than the relationship you have with someone that you sit next to at a desk every day. And a lot of times the experience that you have when you go to church is you sit in a desk next to someone instead of doing hard things with them. And so I think, and that's part of why I've been very fulfilled in what we're doing as a company, because it's allowed me to be in the room with guys who are striving to be like Jesus in the midst of doing hard things and sacrificing. Because at the end of the day, like most of the guys, I have like a couple guys that aren't married, but almost everybody that works for us has a wife, has kids, has a life, and they're sacrificing that. They're leaving that for a moment to go out and protect what, and the way we word it is, we're protecting the person, but we're protecting what God's doing through the person. And so what we're protecting in our hearts is bigger than just the individual. It's the thing that God's using them to do, because God can use anybody to do it, but he chose to use them. And so we're there to help make sure that that runs smoothly, and that it's safe, right? Because of the world that we live in. And you see that proven in some of the most genuine. I was talking to a guy the other night at dinner, who was a missionary in China, and had to him and his wife had to escape China like at night and run away and like make their way back to the States, because there was a hit out on him. They were going to kill him because he was running. There was an underground church of like five people, and he heard about it, and he came and started helping them, and it grew to 500 people. And they found out about him, and they were going to kill him. They already killed some of his friends. Like, he had friends that just disappeared. Somebody was walking one night, and a van pulled up. These dudes hopped out, grabbed the guy, put him in the van, and left. And they were trying to question him about this guy I was talking to. And there's just something special about people who follow Jesus together when you're not supposed to, right? And I think one of the things that's created the environment we have in the U.S. that what you're finding when you go to find a church is that it's easy to be a Christian here, so then it's become disingenuous. It's like, it's not it's not the same because you don't have to be that committed because no one's trying to kill you, right? And I think what that creates also is when something happens that the American church can try to make, like we can try to make it like they're trying to kill us as Christians. They want to kill us. It's so hard to be a Christian in the US. We know that's not true, but we want it to be true because it makes us more legitimate. Like we're like, well, like they're dying in China and they're dying in Iran and they're dying in, you know, in Mosul. And but we're not dying here, but it's so hard here. And we want it to be hard because it's hard for them. And so we're gonna make this about us. And it's like it just becomes this weird thing, right? Whereas like I firmly believe that if the kind of guys who are passionate about training and are passionate about protecting their families and their loved ones and protecting the environment that they believe so passionately is good and right and true, if those people get a hold of what it means to follow Jesus, they'll be some of the best pictures and representations of what it actually means to follow Jesus that there's ever been, because that's needed. We need strong, bold, selfless men who are like, okay, I'm going to do this thing I've been doing, but I'm going to do it for a purpose that's way greater than me. I'm going to do it
Well,
for something way bigger than me.
and I think that's the missing piece for a lot of folks, you know. And I mean, because we saw this, you know, we saw the posts, the videos, the things put on social media. Like, in some regards, you know, what you were saying, I almost disagree with a little bit. And just because we did see people come out and making those kinds of threats, you know, like we killed one, let's kill the rest, that kind of thing. And but. I know that's not what you were saying, but like, I think people needed to see some of those things. Like, it's you have to see evil to believe that it exists,
I agree.
and I think, and I'm not saying that you know anyone's got to go do anything they're uncomfortable with. Like, you know, I think that your faith and your religion and your journey and your relationship with God and Jesus is unique to each person. But if that's what opened the door for you, it's unfortunate that though that's what it took. But I think that that's that like that genesis point for a lot of people where I mean, because it for a lot of folks, it could be this, right? For other people,
And
it was other things.
I don't want to nullify what happened and say that I'm not saying that that was an
Yeah,
implication.
of course.
But what I'm more so referencing is if you've, and this might apply more to people who have like been in the church world for a while, but nothing like what happened to Charlie has ever happened in the US and been associated with being targeted at Christians. And up until that point, anything that happened, the church was like, oh my God, it's so hard. Like if an abortion law gets passed or gay marriage is legalized, we're like, oh my God, there it's so hard to be like, we're just trying. It's like, that's bull crap, right? Like that's not a struggle. But what I do agree with you on, and I think we do agree, is that what happened in that moment when someone was killed, and then on social media, people are rejoicing and ref, because the thing that's so crazy to me is like the people who if the roles were reversed, I don't personally know anyone. Like let's say it was Kamala Harris or someone. I don't know anyone who would have been happy. Everyone that I know would have been like, this is a tragedy. This is the worst thing ever. I can't believe this happened. This someone just got assassinated. This is horrible. And what it revealed when it showed those people rejoicing is what you just said. There are people who hate you because of what you believe. There are people who hate you and they are okay if you get killed. They're okay if you die publicly in front of everybody. And for me, like I think what you were saying, correct me if I'm wrong, for me, it shows me that there is a need for if there are people who are okay if we die, there need to be people who are okay to die protecting what we believe. And
Yeah, it's got to be there. Like there needs to be, it needs to be there. And it, 'cause I think we get, And I feel like we talked about this a little bit already, but like that complacency of it won't happen. So we don't take it as seriously in some regards, or sometimes not even that. It's just somebody else will do it. You know, I feel like that's the maybe that's like I'll be honest with you, more than religion, that feels like a uniquely American thing. Like, somebody else will take care of it. You know, we don't have the consequence that other places in the world do with that mentality. I think that's dangerous. You know, I think we need to get away
What
from that.
happens if you keep living that way, if you keep living in the way of someone else will do it, someone else will protect us, whatever, then you end up with Europe. You end up with what's happening now, where it's like, oh, we actually don't even have the capability to protect ourselves, because for so long we thought someone else was going to do it, and now the people we thought were going to do it are the actual ones that are harming us, and now we have no way to protect ourselves at all, and so we're just screwed. And it's like, that's not what we want to happen here. We don't want it to end up that way here. We got to start taking some initiative. And again, I think there's the, it's so cliche. I don't want to, like, I almost don't want to even say this, but I'm going to use this term very loosely. There has to be an element of the, like, I'm actually not going to use that term because I don't want to say it. The way we say it is, you have to be lion and lamb. You have to have the loving, peaceful, like, soft, tender side of you, and you have to have the lion that is like, you will not harm what I love, who I love. Like, I'm not going to hunt you down, but you're not going to come into my domain. You're not going to come against my family. You're not gonna harm the people that I'm protecting. Like, I love you, and I want you to be healed and have the emotional, mental, physical change and healing that you need. But you're not gonna take away the life of those that I love and those that are around me just because you disagree with it. You can go do your thing over there. You're not gonna do it over here. You know what I mean? And I think having that component where it's like, you can't be so calloused, but you also can't be so soft that you lay down and just let anything happen.
And
And that's
having the conviction, I think, too, to not just to say it or just to think it,
exactly.
but to follow through, to learn the skills that are going to enable you to manifest that
Right.
as a part of who you are. I mean, it's and it doesn't, you know, I feel like some people think it's a, we talked about earlier, like it's just a manifestation of like outward aggression, you know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be that. It can be smarter. You just get smarter about things, like with what you guys do, I'm sure, with the people you work with. Hey, we learned lessons, or I want to learn, you know, just, hey, how can I position myself more safely when I'm walking down the street in a dangerous city? Or what do I look at to secure a room that I'm in? You know, you and your family go out to eat dinner or something, like, you know, or Lord forbid, right? You go to church and we have these incidents that happen, and what to look for, what to do, how to react. Do you actually have the training to respond in the way that you're professing that that this is how you feel, right? But it's like, you know, not to oversimplify it, you can't just talk the talk. You know, you have to take it further than that.
Well, and that's and taking it back to where I think church security does provide a good parallel and example is, the hard thing about, and we've worked with some like private hospitals and stuff too, and private schools. We have two private schools that are our clients that we provide security for. And one of the things we talk about with them, with the hospitals and churches particularly, is like, you have to remember that if we're a church, our goal is that people who are hurt and broken on whatever level are going to come here, and then we can introduce them to something or someone that's going to help them in that process of healing, right? So if you look at everyone as a nail and you're a hammer, that doesn't work. And in the same way, if you're a husband and you're out with your wife and you just want to get in a fight and you're just like, I have these skills and I want to show my wife that I can protect her and I'm going to destroy anything that gets in my way, then you can make a fight happen when a fight wouldn't happen, right? And it's like, that's the same thing. Like, when we hire guys, it's like, if we have a dude who's just, I was actually with a client at an event the other day in Washington State, and one of the event security guys that we had like six of them, and we had to move through this like massive group of people, so they were kind of around us. And this dude, like a dude that was there, like reached his hand over to try to like say hey and like tap my client, like, hey, how are you? Nothing. Like, I was watching him. I saw him before we even got up to him. Wasn't a threat. Like, just some dude who wanted to say hey. The venue security guy freaking launches the guy across the floor. I mean, launches him for like just totally not justified, no reason. But that dude all day long was walking around like I'm gonna do like I'm the man. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, like our presence there with a client will make them act that way more, because they're like, it's like it comes to ego thing for them. They're like, oh, you have your, well, I got to show you guys that I really know what I'm doing or not. And so it's just like this ego driven thing, right? And that is a security risk. That is a danger. That's not something that's beneficial, right? If you are like a hair trigger, it's like I have a gun that it's a custom 226 that I shoot at the range, but I don't carry it because I can shoot it like a dadgum machine gun because the trigger's so light, right? I'm not carrying that in my pants. You know what I mean? I carry a Staccato that has two safeties. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just what I like. I carry Glocks too because I don't think it's gonna go off in my pants. But that gun, I'm not too sure about it. You know what I mean? There's a reason I don't carry a 320. You know what I mean? And so, but anybody likes 320s? I'm just playing. I'm just joking. But
No, I'm not
anyways,
playing it. Dude, don't fucking carry that shit, man. Like, don't do it.
oh, but anyways, my point is, you don't want the human version of that 320. You don't want the like, and because inside of that's like something that needs to be addressed, right? So if you're a church security team, or you're leading a church security team, or you're on a church security team, your guys need to know verbal de-escalation. They need to know how to talk somebody down. They need to know how to like come in there and like not just be the dude who's like standing up in the corner and like, I'm 6'5" and I have tattoos all over me. It's hard for me to not look like the dude who's like trying to hurt you. So like I have to work really hard to be like, hey man, like how can I help you? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? It's like,
Well, and the other part of that too is if you are looking for the to create a problem, like you have as a team, right? And correct me if I'm wrong in this, you have a finite number of resources. You have a team of three or four, right? So if one of these people then decides that they're going to not deal with a problem, they're going to create a problem to deal with, and it takes two of them to manage this solution. Well, now your team of four just became a team of two, and you further
exactly.
compromise your intended goal, which is just the protection of this individual or protection of the people in this venue or whatever you're doing. And it's people don't realize that you're actually hurting yourself by trying to be more like aggressively vigilant, I guess. It's not a good thing. That's why I think we've talked about it before. And a lot of people talk about it when you talk about actual like self-defense and things is avoidance is always going to be the best course of action for so many reasons. But people, everyone wants to do the thing. Everyone wants to go get in a fight, and it's not the right way to look at it at all.
Well, it's like when we, one of the things we say a lot in our job is that 90% of the work is in the advance. So like 90% of the job is like, we have a trip coming up. We're going to like a major freaking city. It's like one of the worst cities in the U.S. to go to.
You guys are going back
But
to
we'll go.
Chicago.
Yeah, no, not Chicago, but similar. And I've spent, a couple weeks planning out like, okay, here's where we're going, here's where we're staying. Here's our transportation. Here's our routes. Here's our secondary and third options for travel. Here's the closest med. Here's the closest, LEO. Are our rooms all on the same floor? Are all the hotel rooms in my name? I'm gonna have a key to every room. I'm gonna make sure that, it's like everything that we're checking ahead of time, right? All of that is the job. If I have to put my hands on somebody or pull my gun or pull a blade or do whatever, I did the other part. I like made a mistake in the other part, or else like something really freaking bad happened. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, yes, I need to be able to do that. That is an integral part to what you have to be able to physically protect the person. But all of the preparation and the preparedness to make sure it doesn't happen is the biggest part of the job. Because if I'm just like, yeah, I can just fight anybody, I'll fight whoever, and I just walk them through the lion's den, then we've got a problem. You know what I mean? And so there has to be a level of prepared. I personally think that like humility is a part of preparedness, because I have to under like if I don't if I think I can handle it all, I won't be prepared, because I'll start to just over exaggerate my own capabilities.
Yeah, and which leads to complacency. Like really it's yeah, unintended, but you get complacent.
Yeah, because if I can do it, I don't need to train. I shot good last time I shot, I'll be fine. You know what I'm saying? It's like
Yeah, then three,
if
four
I
times over that, it's like, hey, I haven't shot in 6 months or 4 months, and now I do shoot like shit, and now I do have problems.
Well, I don't know if I know you're not. I don't think you're. I think you're from where you live, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up in the like deep South Georgia, and
Yeah.
now I live in Louisiana, and it's the same mentality. Same is this: someone on a church security team, or someone at a pistol class, or whatever, and you're like, "Hey, have you ever shot before? Like, do you have any experience?" And they're like, "Well, you know, I grew up shooting shotguns on my dad, so I'm you know, I just used to shoot my pistol in the back at a pie plate in my backyard and you shoot Coke cans. So I think I'm pretty good." And you're like, "Oh, okay. All right, I got you. Okay." It's like, or when
Yeah.
we do a combatives class and somebody comes in and they're like, "Do you have any like fighting experience?" And they're like, "Well, I'm a black belt in Taekwondo." And you're like, "Oh, okay, cool." It's like there might be some element of something in that you could use potentially, maybe, but it's like when you confidently give me unqualified credentials, then you're just telling me that your viewpoint of yourself is like inaccurate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, inflated or elevated. It's based in ego, not in experience.
Exactly. So,
Yeah, and
yeah.
it's tough. I mean, some of that stuff, it's kind of hard to get experience in, you know, unless you go out and actually look for fights, or you've been in a gunfight. Like most people probably haven't, you know, and most people don't want to, like myself included, obviously. I don't want to ever get shot at or shoot at anyone,
Exactly.
you know. Yeah, I think that's a tremendous point. Yeah, the humility thing's huge. Like just chill out for just like I hate that. And guys, yeah, it's all over in the community. It's really annoying. Honestly, I find it annoying.
It
But
is.
it's a problem for development.
It's so interesting whenever something becomes an industry, because then it becomes ultra competitive. And I was talking about this with someone the other day. It happens a lot in the combatives world. It happens in the gun world too. I think it's a little bit harder to do in the gun world, because en masse, there's a higher baseline of understanding in the gun world than there is in the combatives world. And so in the combatives world, what'll happen is someone will invent, in quotes, a hyper complicated way to do something that really doesn't need to be done that way, but they do it because it makes them the only one doing it. And then it makes them have some proprietary thing that no one else does, that then it creates a marketing channel for them to bring in a group of people. It exists in the EP world too. There's all these training schools, and if you watch the way they do things, you're like, there is no reason to do that. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. But they've been teaching it that way for however long. They're the one who created, quote unquote, the system, quote unquote. And so
Right.
now they've become this like subject matter expert on a subject that doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I just had this conversation, well, a part of it with last week. I was talking with Blake Flannery on CQB and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah,
That's a
people
big
will.
place that happens.
Yeah. I mean, and people who know can look at that stuff and fundamentally look at it and be like, that's just unnecessary. Like, you know, or I get why you do it, but you don't need to, and here's why, and you can articulate it. But then you see guys that are like, they put some shit out there and put it together, and they're like, this is next level and revolutionary, and they use it over in this country, and that's, we built it off of this. And it's like, so you didn't create your own system. You just bastardized like three, put it together, and now because nobody else is dumb enough to do it, you're packaging it to people who don't know as the next, like the latest thing. I had people come to me with stuff like that, and they're like, this isn't what you see on the internet. This is like different CQB. I'm like, I am already skeptical, not because I trust the internet so much, but because I really don't trust what you're saying to me right now. And it's like, no, thank you. I'm good. Yeah, I'll pass on this.
Yeah, you don't make your money off people that are educated, and that's part of the problem. It's like, I mean, it's not a problem. It's like that's the beauty of education, is that you get to educate people. But what that creates is it means that you're only marketing to uneducated people, so you can sell them whatever the heck you want to sell them.
Yeah.
And it's like the new diet, you know what I mean? It's like, well, if
Well,
you
and
this
just
thing,
like diets and stuff, right? Eventually, it goes out of style.
that's
People,
right.
if they figure out that it didn't work,
That's
you know,
right.
everyone's about it, and then they figure out it doesn't work, and within a year or two, you've burned through whatever market share you had.
That's right.
You know, and the but the difference being, right, with a diet, it's just like, all right, on to the next thing. With this stuff, you're potentially talking about people's lives,
That's right.
which
And
I think is
even
seriously
then,
shitty.
you're talking people's lives, and you're also developing like you're developing a training scar that you might not ever be able to fix. It's like if you did something the wrong way for 5 years, you're not fixing it in like a couple of good classes. Like you're just gonna get frustrated because like your natural inclination is gonna be to go back to the way you did it for 5 years. And so it's like it just creates so much extra legwork and so many things. And honestly, if you apply that on a bigger scale, I think that applies to what we're looking at in our country right now. It's just like we've regardless of what, like, even the people like you and I who have probably been looking at things for a while and been like, this is jacked up. I think in the last 6 months, we've realized a whole nother level of things that we were like, I didn't know that was jacked up too. Like, what the heck? And it's like, it just expands, and you're like, there's always this level of something that you've been believing that was probably not exactly accurate. And going back to humility, if you don't have the capability internally to say, okay, I've believed this for 15 years, but now I'm realizing it's wrong, and then you don't have the ability to do that internal work, then you're just going to get stuck. And I was having a conversation with some guys the other day. This may be, I know we're pushing on time, but I don't want to dive into this forever. But I was just talking with them, and it was like, you know, at what point? Like if we are men with families and lives and jobs and values, at what point is enough enough? And if we have a group and a team, and we have people who are agreeing, if crap hits the fan, these are my people, then we all have to be on the same page at what point enough is enough. And that I think is something that a lot of people are coming to grips with today in our current environment in the country, is like, okay, when is this, when are we done with this? You know what I mean? And that puts you in, because what that created in our little group of guys that were talking is we realized we all look at some things differently. Like we have like a core group of beliefs that are the same, but then we're like, oh, I don't agree with that. Well, I don't agree with that. Well, I don't, and it's like, oh crap, we're actually not as, like when it gets down to the fine things of like, okay, when are we actually going to take a stand? Whatever that looks like, are we on the same page?
It's a lot. There's a lot of coordination. That's the ad. I mean, people poo-poo on it, but because it's not sexy and fun, but the admin side of some things, as well
No.
as just getting, you know, five grown men to completely agree on something is not not as easy as people would like to make it out to be. You know, I'm sure we'd love to just go, well, here are the rules. I'm writing them down, and this is what we're doing. And guys are like, well, wait a minute, I don't like that. Like, well, I don't give a fuck. We're doing it this way. And it's like, you know, is that really gonna fly? In it, maybe if you're that strong a leader, that proven a leader of your peers, and they go, all right, well, shit, I'll ride with you, man. Like, we'll just do it. Then maybe, but in most cases, not.
That's
So,
right. That's right.
yeah,
And then I
it's
think in coming to grips with that is important too. It's just like understanding, like, okay, we don't agree on that, and that's okay. And we do agree on this, and that's okay. Like just having those things that, like, you know, figuring out. Because we just live in such a divisive time. And I think one of the most important things, and what I think will get people through, is finding out where are we unified? Where do we agree? What can we stand on? What can we stand up against? And getting to that place, you know, I think is super important. You know, hope it wasn't too preachy or anything today, but For me, that's just kind of where it all comes back to. Because like if you believe that something is truth, and then if you can boil everything down to say, well, I believe this is like this is the ultimate truth to which all th other things come from, then
Yeah.
that does make it easy to surround yourself with people where you can be like, okay, as long as we all agree on this truth and we agree on this, everything else can kind of sort itself out. But if this is our line in the sand and this is what we're going to stand for, then if it's from a preparedness standpoint or if it's from a financial standpoint or whatever, and you're like, this is where we're going to be, this is where we're going to come together on. I think that's a beautiful thing, regardless of who
Yeah.
people are or what it is,
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And yeah, no, we are pushing it. So I do appreciate the time, the insight, the knowledge and everything. It's always good to sit down and catch up with you. I know you were sharing me with me a little bit before we hit record, like just the schedule, the
Yeah,
number of
13
flights that you
flights,
threw out
13 flights
there.
in the last I think this thing was six, it might have been seven. It was like pretty much two a day for a week. It was a lot.
That's a lot. That's like beyond a lot. I would say that two flights in a week is more than I care to have to deal with if I can help it
It's
to
more than I
do.
care to have to deal with too, I promise. I promise.
But I always enjoy sitting down with you, man. I know you're out there on some socials and stuff. People have questions, maybe they want to reach out. Is there a way is where can they reach you
Yeah,
to
so
make contact?
my Instagram is jonah.shepherds. It's either jonah.shepherds or shepherds.jonah, one or the
It's
other.
shepherds.jonah. Yeah, there you
There
go.
you go. Boom,
Get in.
shepherds.jonah. And then our company Instagram is Shepherds Group. They can follow us on there. And then our website is shepherdstaffconsulting.com.
Right on, man. Yeah. It's
Sweet,
good
dude.
catching up, dude. And like I said, appreciate the insight. We will we'll do it again. I'm sure we'll do it again.
Yeah, anytime, bro.
All right, man. Good chatting with you, and I'll be in touch. I think we hit on a lot of really important items in that conversation. I love this. I really do. Like it's on one hand, it kind of throws all of my planning and stuff out the window, but I love when we get into these passionate conversations about some of these things. Like I thought we were going to spend the entire conversation on executive protection and things like that, and we actually talked a lot more about church security. We did talk about executive protection, right? Because I think that those two worlds intersect pretty heavily for Jonah. But we also spent, like, I think more time talking about morality and faith and, like righteous conviction and just and perception of the world, like a lot of stuff. And it all the beautiful part of it, and like, I began phrasing that like it was a bad thing, but the beautiful part about that is that it's all intertwined, it's all connected. We talk about preparedness, preparation, being a protector. If you're, if you're one of those super weird guys that wants to call yourself a sheepdog, and that whole bit, like we talk, the point is we talk about all of that stuff in this community as a justification for why we do a lot of what we do, when in reality we just do it because it's cool or it's fun. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think when we what we talked about a lot here is when it gets down to the core of it, you have to be doing it for the right reasons and have that, like, I don't even know how to articulate this, like that righteous, I like that word for this conversation, that like that righteous energy, that righteous will to do what is right and to protect people and if necessary sacrifice your own life, like the and that's way easier said than done. I think lots of people say that say those things. They say they'll lay down their life, they'll make the ultimate sacrifice, whatever, right? And most of us, I think, until we're faced with that situation, with that scenario, we don't know that. We can sit here and say it all we want, right? But we don't know that that's the case. And I think that if you truly, in your heart, believe that and want to do that, not that you want to die necessarily, right? But like you want to be able to say and do those things. Like I think if you're doing these things, if you're learning these skills, if you're putting yourself in these kinds of positions for truly for the right reasons, protecting your family and everything, then I would say you probably have a much greater chance of that being true, and I don't want to just harp on that because we talked about so much. I think church security is something that I haven't really gotten into here on the pod a lot. It's difficult. I've had a couple interactions with folks talking about church security work. I did put together for a friend a presentation basically for him to use to lobby for a church security team at his church. Now, Unfortunately, it's prohibitive for me to attend that particular church just because it's like an hour plus from home for me, which is a lot. And I also visited another church and consulted with them. This is what I mentioned with Jonah in the conversation we just had. They had me in for a consultation, and you guys know if you see my content, might have followed my discussions, like they brought me in based off of a recommendation from somebody I train with on our Thursday nights and stuff. I was really upfront with them. Like they asked, "Oh, do you have certifications?" I go, "There isn't really a certification for this." I mean, you do I have a company? No. Do I have military or law enforcement background? No. But I'd be happy to show you guys some things that I've learned and show you the importance of this stuff and how to work together better. And then if you see value in that, I can certainly get you in touch with a couple different companies that could come and provide a whole training package, so to speak. And I think that could be great. For a lot of you guys that want to help your church and you want to maybe be the guy that helps to facilitate that, I think if you have that conversation with a lot of transparency and a lot of honesty, if you haven't done the work out in the world, like many of us haven't, and you say, here, I can show you some things, and this is half the sales pitch to it, because really, for whatever reason, a lot of these organizations, for as concerned as they are, that's why they're having the conversation about a security team, they're also very concerned, overly concerned in a lot of ways and things of public perception. Oh, we don't want it to seem too militant. Oh, we don't want to make this place, appear too much like a fortress. We don't want people to know that there's a security team. Well, there's gives and there's takes with that conversation, and you have to be willing to look people in the eye and say, hey, this is the world we live in today, for better or for worse. It's not great out there. It's not safe. People like us, people who worship, people who have religious backgrounds and things, I'm not just saying Christians, because Lord knows that other religions have had their fair share of hate and backlash in the last several months. It's not safe. That's why these attacks keep happening, is because these places, these centers of worship, these organizations, right, are ran in a way that make them a target. And I think that it's a very noble task, but also a very difficult task to reverse that positioning. Now, I think, given that they're private organizations, they have more flexibility and can more immediately turn those things around. But it also depends on, who your congregation elders are and what the church is willing to do and not do. And we got into a bunch of that stuff. It was so cool to me hearing that there's teams out there that have internal comms set up and squared away, that have qualification requirements and drill requirements, once a month that you have to do these things. I think that's incredible. Because then it almost replaces a lot of your normal, quote unquote, normal training with go do it for this purpose. You're still getting the training, you're still getting better, you still have the development. It's your own one-on-one session or solo sessions, I should say, not one-on-one, kind of becomes supplemental to that. It gives you the purpose you're looking for. It gives you the mission and the standards and all the things that a lot of people, I think, look for when they try to, measure their own capabilities and performance. I think it's a great thing that that does exist out there. I think it shows that if you're working with the church team right now, and if you guys like are, I'd love to hear about that stuff. Like I really would. Shoot me a message, shoot me a direct message or an email or something. And just hear what you guys are doing to try and be better. The crummy part really is that, a lot of these leadership folks are really, really concerned with public image and not the reality of safety. and it's tough. Like you can do both. It takes more work. And that's why I was a little bit disappointed. Like I never got the call back after that consultation. I offered to do it for free, just given what it was. I didn't feel right taking any money. I offered to volunteer my time and like, hey, I don't want to come out here for 2 hours. I want to come out here for like 4 to 6 hours and really like share what I have and give some depth to what I have learned to help you guys, so you at least have a starting point for a basis for understanding for bringing somebody in. Because unfortunately, there's good companies and there's bad companies out there, and sometimes you just get sold a bill of goods and you don't realize it because you don't know what you don't know. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get to do more of that in the future. Something, I'm looking for a congregation near my home. There's a lot of churches in my area. It's difficult to feel them out. You can't just call them up and be like, "Are you guys a real church? Are you guys a good church?" You have to be nuanced with it. You kind of have to find people that you trust to give you feedback and insight and things. So unfortunately, it's a process. And the days of just walking into any church and getting a good one, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, right? Just isn't as much a thing. But at any rate, I really do appreciate you guys hanging out and listening. I do hope that you took some really strong things away from this, or at the very least found it interesting as I did, because the world's changing. You know, it's just a reality we have to face. And I think that if we do anything other than acknowledge that there's a lot of stuff wrong, we're doing ourselves a disservice. And, you know, when you do that, like we talked about, and you convince yourself that there's nothing wrong, you're setting yourself up for failure. So at any rate, thank you guys so much for hanging out. Appreciate the support. Like the podcast. If you guys enjoy this stuff, you know, you can go on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, like us, follow us, subscribe. All of those things are tremendously helpful, believe it or not, when getting additional guests on, with getting sponsorship and support, when just all kinds of stuff. It helps a absolute ton. And I thank all of you guys for your support. I know, I think I posted about this a while back. We actually broke into the top 5% on listen notes. So that's a really, really big deal for this podcast, and something that I've been really working on for a very, very long time. So sincerely appreciate all of you guys for listening. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day, your busy week, your life, right, to sit with us and listen. I hope it was good for you. That's all I have for everybody. Until next week, you guys, stay safe out there. Enjoy the fall. We're into the heart of October already. The year's almost over. It's crazy. But until next time, everybody, like I said, stay safe. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.